thing is, what were your impressions as you oversaw that portion of?
By the way, are you interested? I got this from Dan Foster in Fort Cox. Put him on to me a whole month or two ago. He called me. This was when, it was January, just after NCAA had passed the modified 48. And I guess several institutions, particularly black institutions, were talking about the possibility of courses. As far as I know, there are none existing. And he won't know what the basis for the judge's decision in the 800 suit. I couldn't recall it working those things. So, just out of curiosity, since I was going down to Atlanta to be on a college board panel 2 or 3 weeks ago, retention of athletes, Southeastern College Board panel, I got him to look it up. Have you seen it, read it?
No, I have not.
Well, I give it to you if you want. You can look at it. Well, going back, I used this down in Atlanta. I called Patty Vaughn. She was the administrative assistant I worked with the NCAA on the 1.6 a long time. What my theme was in talking in a college board was the impact of the 1.6 on starting testing in the nation. Because we on the college board were just up and down the seaboard primarily. Tennessee didn't have any testing. Alabama didn't have testing. You had the college board somewhat on the West Coast. Florida even used a state testing program. They didn't even use college board. When we used to get transfer students from Florida, they oftentimes had to take the college board because they had taken a Florida state examination. But anyway, this really got the ACT, American College Testing Program, started when they had to have 1.6 because most of the Midwest opted for ACT, which is started by a bunch of registrar admissions officers in the Iowa area. And, back there I had a note that was in the NCAA minutes, which I got was the fact that they announced out there that in the fall of 1961, the ACC now had a 750 minimum SAT score and might raise it to 850 or 900. It did go to 800, I said, and dropped in 1972. And that was the suit, and it was dropped because when the judge ruled against it, then the ACC voted to drop it, and so the judge then vacated the summons, so it wouldn't be on the record.
Right.
So that's the essence of that.
And the ACC, as I understand it, and you were very active in this, was the first conference to set academic standards.
The Big Ten is where the 1.6 started. The Big Ten, back in the 60s, they started in 61 with a program for awarding grants and aid on the basis of academic progress based on scores and rank, which makes more sense than just to cut off of rank. Any test person would know that. And they started with a 1.7 in 1961. And emphasize this is for grants and aid, not admission. This is the thing, every time standards come up, they reiterate that you did the 48 thing, the 2.0, that this is a standard for grants and aid, not admission, and so forth. They are the ones, I guess, probably the first conference that read it. Now, which one was the highest, that would be another question. 800, 750, 800, are their 1.7. As their representative said, I say, it varied greatly within the Big Ten Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And, but when the 1.6 was adopted, you see an institution had three options. They had an option of doing an institutional test on a recognizable basis. They could use a conference statement, or they could use the national statement. Purple handbook at the national table. The ACC went to the national table, which was the highest. Conference tables, Southeastern Conference developed the conference table. And not many of the institutions went to the national table. Later on, the NCAA became less lenient as they had options to do these tables. You know, first of all, they would approve just about anything to get them started on something. Because I say, here's a vast part of the country that had no testing whatsoever. Some parts of the country, I believe it's one of the schools in the Big Ten, one representative got up and said he couldn't get 500 tests out of, I think it was Iowa or somewhere, one of the largest Big Ten schools, to do a sample. He couldn't find 500 people who had an ACT or a College Board test score, you know. Not that they're that poor, they just weren't required to get mm-hmm. into. So NCAA accepted most any standard. They would cross, some schools had, high schools had ranks, some had three-point averages. They worked out tables. Probably not very justifiable from a testing standpoint, but anything to get them started.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the representative, the assistant, commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, came up here and spent one night down to Holiday Inn. We talked to see me at 11 or 12 o'clock about what they should do. Because you see, just show you what the situation was. Here they were faced with Georgia as a College Board. Vanderbilt had a College Board, and Florida, and all the rest of the conference either had ACT or really didn't have any experience at all because it wasn't prevalent in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And so the NCAA, our committee, probably Jim Weaver, who was commissioner of the ACC, was chairman of the NCAA Committee on Test and requirements at that time. And so we would bend over backwards things that we knew. You really can't equate ranks great averages very accurately, but anything to get them to
adopt some sort of minimum standard.
Right, so they get going some minimum standard.
Yeah. What year did this really become a factor? When was the real thrust?
I said 20 years ago, or 2 years ago, January 1, 1966, it was adopted in 65. It was adopted in annual meeting. Dr. Evans may have told you, I think it was one Sunday, this was in Washington, they were meeting. Mr. Ritchie was then the chairman, the representative from Clemson. I wasn't until 70. I was secretary of the Athletic Council from 1955 on until 1970. I guess he retired, and I was chairman from 70 until 82 when I retired. So it's 20 years ago this January that it became effective, January 1, 1966. As I say, they had these options there.
Mm-hmm.
They had to sign up. The only thing this governed was NCAA postseason events. Or it's like this basketball team right now. You could play your season without signing, but you couldn't go to any NCAA postseason events participating. And the president had to sign this statement that this is how we're going to meet the standard by an institutional, and the committee had to approve. It had to have some basis for it. He had to have some scores. And this is representative, you know. You're always looking for the 50th percentile. What is the middle thing, you know? And so, as I say, we did a lot of things that weren't justifiable from a pure testing.
says, now with this new groove, we're going to have to dig out a lot of the old, what we used to call OI's, official interpretation. You know, we just had a little reams of them. One of them had to do with how many times you can take the test, you know. I'm sure that's going to rise again, all these little things. This is what I committed to. Yeah, they were published, you see, official interpretation. So,
from the standpoint of Clemson University, as it related to the promulgation of these rules, how did we stack up? I mean, how have our athletes historically been stacking up, say, with the country at large, and not to single out any other particular university?
I don't really have. There aren't any figures to my knowledge. Of course, we were a member of a conference, which probably the highest standard at one time. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, back then when we had 750 or 800, we weren't very competitive, too, with a lot of schools. Of course, you read Dan Foster's column this morning. He talks about South Carolina got out too soon. Well, somewhere down there, I noticed it sometime in the past year. I had my note. I was sitting next to Dietzel, and I still got those notes made. First thing he did, after he said, we're getting out, we had numerous meetings, and he went around the table as who was going to play him in football. And it came as a shock to him, I think, that some of them weren't going to play. And they later worked it out, but they weren't going to play. I know he and Maryland had some differences right then, because he wasn't willing to go to Maryland, but when Maryland come down there. What I recall, that was the first thing. I still have that pencil pad there. anyway, of course, then they didn't wait for us to get out. But the other thing is, Dan Foster mentioned, was the fact we had a limitation on scholarships. The NCAA didn't have one until a subsequent year or 2 years, something like that, when he came up with the 30 freshmen. He talks about how well Pittsburgh did, you know, to get 80-something people and kept them freshmen, a lot of them that won the national championship. But South Carolina tried to load up. I guess they weren't quite as successful loading up. But there are two factors there. And, a lot of people, he said, blamed it on McGuire, but I don't know what McGuire's opinion was. But anyway, that column was interesting because I was a part of that and sitting next to Clemson and South Carolina and Maryland always had pretty thought about the same way, but the North Carolina schools voted pretty much as a package.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, get back to your question. I don't have any solid information other than the fact that the ACC, not only do we have the 750 and then the 800 SAT at the time, most had no, except the Big Ten was starting to experiment. And then we used the national table exclusively all the time. The 1.6 was in operation. We never used an institution or a conference table. Well, we never developed one.
So our athletes always had to meet the highest minimum standards that were available.
Right.
And, okay, let's take, and again, we're not going to pick on Georgia, but they just went through this terrible situation that they had.
The president resigned this morning?
No, sir, I did not know that.
Right.
It is.
I'm sorry.
I am, too, because I
think spillover is somewhat like we had. All your birds come home to roost when they got an opportunity. He's made some enemies over there.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
I find it hard to believe that's his fault, though.
I agree.
I think there's some responsibility lower down the ladder that probably needs to be addressed.
He's a little brush. We used to work with him closely at the College Football Association. He was president. In fact, a few years ago, when Clemson and George and some others were trying to let's get our own TV program, then everybody started dropping off. Well, you know, George and Oklahoma finally brought suit. But, he was with it for life. He was president of CFA, College Football Association, during that time. He's made some blood cleanness over there. And, he's only, what, 56, 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But they just announced it moving this week for part of the youth tonight. He resigned.
Well, yeah, the situation, though, there, that apparently the Kemp woman pressured into giving grades to athletes.
Yeah.
That situation never existed at Clemson, to your knowledge.
We don't have courses like that. We didn't.
What's the difference? Explain from my record the kind of courses they're talking about. It's my understanding that Clemson, when you come here, you enroll in courses that everybody enrolls in. There's not the remediation.
You've got to select a major.
Right.
Yeah, you've got to select a major. I recall seeing the paper over there that Smith, I believe, was, well, he was the leading ground gainer a year or two ago. I believe he played 3 years. And the academics weren't going to let him continue. The paper said he had been in developmental all this time, in other words, which would have been about 2.5 years. He quit in the middle of the year, so that they weren't going to let him continue. But he played 3 seasons. They're leading ground base on Aiden Smith. Well, at times we've had remedial English and remedial math. Now they only have the remedial English. But only do those two courses, but you say we had to select a major. We had to select a major.
Yeah, I just wondered how we had managed to do that. And one of the ways that, in other words, to put it in a positive, something else in a positive fashion, that when people come to school here, with the exception of being able maybe to take a remedial English course, that they're entered into the mainstream of courses with all the other students, and there's no way for any special thing because they're in there with everybody else.
Right.
There's no special group of athletic courses.
Well, he can't arrange a group of courses because our office, schedule coordinator, does the schedule and does that, of course, now by computer. Do it by hand, but we still use a block, a printed block of courses. Back when I did it personally, when we had 600 freshmen and so forth, but we just assigned him, as I was when I came to Clemson, assigned to section so-and-so, the number of a section, and that just happened to be, we had employed students to work in the office, and they were extract from the master schedule that the faculty had come by and penciled in. They would make up so many sections. You just gave this man a mimeograph. Second, here's yours. Go sign it up. This is where he's going. Now we do it by computer. He doesn't even sign it up. He's already in it.
Mm-hmm.
The computer. Yeah. I think that's apparently the difference as I see it. Is that he selects a major. It's one that will work toward a degree.
Yeah, there are no non-credit courses offered then.
Oh, there's been talking. Now, there know at some institutions you go 2 years and then you have to select a major, you know. Some good institutions have a very strong basic 2 years, so everybody has to run. The problem with that is I think Georgia Tech had somewhat of that situation. But, of course, not all of theirs are technical, so it's fine. You're all taking math or chemistry. But some institutions, they have a problem where a man's, it's not a technical school, but he's taking a technical course. He really needs to start science and math in the freshman year. And I can recall when we only didn't start physics until sophomore year, and, of course, the year now it's been in the freshman year. You're going to major in something.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to finish your physics and your calculus by the end of your sophomore year in order to go ahead with the technical work in engineering.
Exactly. I'm trying to, again, to kind of reference your involvement and the involvement of Clemson in helping to establish the standards for the ACC. What was our part in that?
Well, I can't speak to the 750 because that's from Mr. Richards, Chairman. I don't really recall how the 750 came about because that was – back as 1961, was announced in the fall of 61. Now had the 750 money, mm-hmm. announced at the NCAA meeting. When they were talking about standards, they didn't talk about it at the NCAA meeting from 61 on up to 65 when it was finally adopted. And like I told a group in Atlanta, I don't know what'll happen to 48. I don't know whether you'll get through this 2-year phase-in period or not. Because they talked about doing away with the 1.6 about the year they adopted it. You know, there's always 2.6. And then if I'd got up to the 2.0, which was no standard as I could concern, I mean, I saw very few people that didn't have a C average in high school, which is just about, it's just like 400 college board, it's zero.
Right.
And this had nothing to do with it. Look at that. I told you about it.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of minimum.
Yeah.
What's been the, in your opinion, what's been the pressure? I mean, where's the pressure come from to increase minimum standards?
I think we gave it 40 different times over the state. So you couldn't say this came up here in the criticism of 1.6 Montana. My people will have to go 100 miles, you know, to take and get this test. Well, so that we wouldn't have that problem in South Carolina, I've been to Charleston many times, of Lawrence, I had it given. Anyway, the four institutions, later five, working together using rented test materials, which are ones they had already used, you see. And we would change them, hopefully, each year. And we would give it all over the state. And we got a lot of acclaim for that because we were in the front runner of state institutions. Now,
had short, standards. About what year, and this is important, was it that the four schools got together and decided to put minimum standards on just admissions?
I'm trying to, well, I could find it 5 minutes in the office looking at the catalog.
If you could just ballpark it for me, I'll go back and search the catalogs myself. But about what year was it? I know certainly it was in place in the 70s because that's when I.
Yeah, it goes way back into the
mid 60s.
When we're talking about the ACC, we already had scores then.
And that's what I'm saying. In other words, in the four of you. Schools got together and said, hey, we're going to, it doesn't matter whether we're a state institution or not, we're still going to have minimum entrance requirements for everybody.
Right.
That year, was that in the mid-60s or early 60s? Or I don't imagine it was in the 50s because the CMP report, you know, said there were no standards really for admission at that point.
That was 65.
Right.
I'm thinking 50. Trustees approved us going ahead with it pretty shortly after the CMP. I believe it was before 60. I can find it.
I might give you.
No, I called the admission office. I had catalogs all of them. I've got some, but not all of them. You can even pick it out the first year that says you've got to take the SAT.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we weren't all using the same standard. But we were using the same test.
Right. It didn't matter if one school would take 400, another school would take 600.
Right.
You're requiring a test to be taken.
And that was the thing that got us national notice. As I say, I was on some national programs. I remember being in Pittsburgh on the program. The question, how can you do this? But testing wasn't that accepted. It wasn't widespread. In fact, ACT was just organized in 58. That's when they gave the first test. And not until...
Now, when you're talking about testing, you're talking about testing at state institutions as opposed to testing at private, or you're talking about testing, period?
I'm talking about state institutions requiring tests. Which was a rarity.
Yeah, prior to 1958, I would assume that almost any state institution, if you were a graduate of a state high school, you were automatically in the door.
That was predominantly
the case.
Predominant, because I say Ohio State, I know these things, they've got standards. No, they just postponed. They had to take those people. They were selective in the first quarter.
Yeah, they just couldn't take them in the first quarter.
So they got away with that. I don't know what provisional law. Anyway, but they had to take them eventually, and that was prevalent in many states.
This is an exciting thing here, really, to find out that Clemson was among the leadership in South Carolina to have minimum test scores for state institutions and in the nation. And that it was being done in the late 50s. Right after the CMP report pointed out the fact that there were no standards for admissions.
We did a lot in testing. We sponsored